You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Daniel Lee, or Photos by DLEE. So today we're going to be talking about something that's not quite known, that you can't really tell or predict, but at least we can sort of discuss it and see what we think might happen, and that is how safe the future of the APS-C market is. I'll also go over a few news topics and just discuss some what I've been up to. So first off, as always, what I've been up to. For me, as you would probably know if you follow me on social media or anything, I finally finished my 35mm review. Did take me quite some time to get through, but thankfully it's already done. As you would see, it came out as a previous podcast episode. That was just sort of like a loose-based discussion. Petapixel were nice enough to repost that as well when I submitted it to them. I'm hoping, you know, from what I've seen online, most people enjoyed it, so that's good to know that people did enjoy it. If someone's looking to buy that lens, hopefully it does influence their decision, you know, or not influence, but help them make a decision on if it's sort of a lens they want to buy. You know, each time I use that lens, it really does change my opinion on it. I think I like it more and more. I'll still say the rendering is a bit boring in regards to it, but otherwise it's actually a very, very good solid lens. The lens that I'm sort of less sure about is the 24mm. I feel like here in Sydney, if I'm shooting cityscapes, the 35mm is actually very good, because these days with how well Photoshop does panoramas and that sort of stuff, same as Lightroom with Photo Merge, I don't feel like an ultra wide angle is needed, because the distances you generally do cityscapes here in Sydney, you have a lot of negative empty space, just sky and water. And it's just that very tiny bit in the middle. Even at 24mm, it's actually the subject. So you don't really need something so wide in that instance. Because of this, I could see myself, if you know this rumored 16mm GM does come out, selling my 24 GM for that, and just once again going back to relying on the 35mm GM. If Sigma or, you know, some third party could do something like a 16 or 18mm, aside from that Sanyang one, super cheap, I could honestly see myself just getting that and using the 35mm for everything again, and just going down to like a very small lens kit, considering what I shoot. Otherwise, you know, what I've been up to, PlayStation 5 is coming out as of release, would be the next day, this coming Thursday, the 12th of November. I'm very excited. I got 2 days, both 12th and the 13th, off to play it. I'm going to do some nice product shots, so just trying to figure out some ideas. I might do like a super very, very, you know, normal style product shot, just on black, on gray, that kind of thing. Or I'll do something a bit different. I'll sort of figure it out once I get the console. It's meant to be huge, so that'll probably, you know, play into it a bit as well. Otherwise, on to news topics. Canon have announced both their 70-200 f4 LIS and the 50mm f1.8 RF lenses. These have been rumored for quite some time. They are upgrades, so when you look at the Canon 70-200 f4, apparently it's 11% lighter and 32% shorter, so as you can tell, there is an upgrade there. Whether it's better in image quality, that is another thing. I have to wait for reviews to be out and that sort of thing. Apparently, it's meant the optical stabilizer has 3 settings and up to 5 stops of shake correction on its own and up to 7.5 stops of vibration reduction when combined with the IBIS on the R5 and R6 cameras. It's definitely a small, it's, you know, like not small as in like a 51.8 small, but it's small for what it is, which does look impressive. In terms of the RF 50mm f1.8, it honestly looks just like the EF DSLR version, but then in an RF mount and with a focus ring, no control ring, which obviously for something so budget, it's not surprising. It's set for the RF, sorry, I should have mentioned pricing. For the RF 50mm f1.8, that one is set at $199, so decent price. For the RF 70mm f2 f4 LIS, that one's set at $1599, which is quite a bit higher than what I thought it would be, considering it is an f4 lens, because I'm pretty sure the AUD price of the EF version was around $1,500-$1,600, so that means this one AUD wise is going to be over $2,000, which is a lot of money for an f4 lens. Sure, the RF bodies do much, much better at high ISO and much better dynamic range, but it's still, you know, quite a high price for an f4 lens. One thing that sort of concerns me is with Canon, especially in the EF mount, you had so many good quality L lenses for around just over $1,000. So you had the 17-40, which was just under $1,000, which wasn't optically the best lens, but it was very good for the quality. You had the 16-35 f4, which AUD-wise, you could get for around 1200, 1100 on sale, which was really good. The 100L macro, that one is about $1,000 as well. You know, you can get it under that when it's on sale as well, which was really good. The 135L, a little bit over 1000 AUD, that one's another great one. These are all like amazing lenses for a really reasonable price, but I honestly don't know if we'll get that with the RF mount. It could just be prices are really inflated due to COVID and all the costs, extra costs that are involved with that. But hopefully once, you know, everything goes back to normal, because it will, eventually the prices can go back to a reasonable and normal amount as well. The other lens announcement was from Panasonic. They announced an 85mm f1.8 for their L-mount. This lens, you know, looks decent enough. It weighs 355 grams, which is pretty decent long. It's a decent weight. It's 82 millimeters long as well. I didn't see any actual images from it, but I can see it's priced at $599 US. So that's pretty decent as well. Not too expensive. That reminds me, with the RF 50mm f1.8, I'm surprised they went so cheap and so budget with it. I don't know, people probably like it at that price, whereas I would have rather seen something just under $1,000 AUD, but much higher image quality and much higher build, just like the Sony FE55mm Zeiss one, the f1.8 lens. I think they should have gone a little bit more upmarket, not too expensive, make it still cheaper, but make it like a bit more pricier. What I'm hoping is the reason they did that is they're going to get like a set of f1.4 lenses that are just going to be over $1,000 AUD. So you get like a 51-4, which is really nice quality, but more not as high end as the 1.2s, but then just be over $1,000 AUD. And the same with the 85 and the 35mm focal length. If we can get that, like your super budget f1.8 lenses, and then your slightly better f1.4 lenses, and then a bit higher than that, you got your 1.2 lenses, it will be amazing. It will be the perfect way to set up the lens lineup. So you got options for everyone. You got just the real casual shooters that want something cheap with your f1.4 lenses. You got the enthusiasts to the working pros, which will have your f1.4 lenses. And then you got something really out there and really high end for the, you know, whoever has the money to buy it, which are your f1.2 lenses. Now onto our main topic. So for those who read Petapixel or any photography news site would have seen an article the other day about how camera sales in 2020 have plummeted as much as 54%. So these stats come from CIPA, which is the Camera and Imaging Products Association in Japan. According to them, camera manufacturers in 2019 sold 1.562 million DSLR units through September of 2020, which is down 54%. The value of those cameras was 64.6 billion yen, which is a 51% decrease year over year. So you're probably wondering what this has to do with, you know, APS-C. So obviously the camera market has for a while been shrinking, and all the camera manufacturers are fighting to get a piece of that, you know, shrinking pie. Canon seem to be, you know, scooping up more and more with the RF mount, but you have to wonder what this means for APS-C. So the reason for this is if you look at the camera market now, so you obviously got not so much cameras, I don't, you know, still consider them to be dedicated cameras, but you got your smartphones, your point and shoots, which are pretty much dead. You got your APS-C cameras, your full frame, medium format, you know, and so on and so on. You also got Micro Four Thirds in there as well, which sort of are similar to APS-C in a sense. You have to wonder how much they can survive in the long term. Now, the reason I say that survival is sort of questionable is if you look at what happened to the point and shoot market. So smartphones got so good, you know, that carrying around a dedicated camera in the point and shoot seemed not like really feasible when you could do the same thing with your phone. The majority of point and shoots were just, you know, pure auto. You can't actually control it. You can't change lenses. So there was that difference there. So that's where APS-C sort of has that advantage. Now, if you look at mobile phones as they are, they're getting more into computational photography now. For me personally, I always prefer to get it right in camera. It looks nicer in camera. You know, when it comes to say like fake bokeh that you can do on the iPhone, well, pretty much any phone now, they have their, you know, portrait mode sort of stuff. But as they get better, obviously it's gonna creep closer and closer towards APS-C. So with the iPhone, for example, they keep putting the sensor in that bigger and bigger. So if you look at the iPhone 12 Max Pro, that one's got an even larger sensor compared to the XS Max. That one had a larger sensor, and now the 12 Pro Max is even bigger. So as their sensors get bigger, obviously, depending on lenses, that's always the deciding factor. It's gonna sort of creep more and more closer to what APS-C can do. Now, obviously, with APS-C, they can increase the performance, increase what they can actually do themselves to sort of differentiate themselves and prove their worth in a sense, even though they can already, you know, do, in my opinion, much better compared to a smartphone due to the fact they can change lenses as well. And you actually have that dedicated aperture control. But what you have to keep in mind is for people who are so more limited in budget, which one would you go for? You know, because if you already know you need a phone, you're going to go for the better phone and, you know, miss out on the camera. You're just going to have the camera or, you know, at the same time as well, sometimes APS-C cameras can be quite expensive. So, for example, when it first launched, the Fujifilm X-T4, I believe it was going for about 2,800 for the body only, 2,800 AUD. At that time, you could get several full-frame bodies for that, cheaper than that, actually. You could get the Canon EOS R plus the 35mm lens, because that was on really good sale for around 2,200, I think. You could get those two for the same price as just the Fuji body. You could get the A7 Mark III when it goes on sale. You can get the Canon RP. There's so many different bodies you could actually get the full frame for that same price as the APS-C. Now, the Fujifilm bodies, not to knock them, they seem like really good. To be honest, if I had the money, I would buy one straight out. I'll buy an X-T4. It looks amazing. Their lenses are really great options, but it's more just the cost of things. As everything sort of competes, like if you look at Canon, I personally like what they're doing, trying to push the prices of full frame down in a sense with stuff like the RP. Because even though the RP isn't the best performing camera, like specs wise, this is just the first iteration. So each time, you know, they have to improve on it. They can't just release the same camera. So as they improve, those specs will get better and better. But if the price still stays that low and they really do push the prices further down, eventually, what's that going to mean for APS-C? If you can pay, you know, 2,800 AUD for a APS-C body, or you can pay like, you know, 1,200 for a full frame body that has similar specs, which one would you go for? Would you really go for APS-C? Especially since, you know, Fuji don't make their cameras that tiny either, the X-T line. They're big, they're built for ergonomics, so it's not like it's a size advantage either. In a way, I don't think smartphones are as much a threat to APS-C as full frame is, purely because the full frame prices, you know, they keep trying to drop them, and APS-C prices tend to go up. So eventually they're going to get so high as, you know, the same cost as a full frame. So in that sense, like I said, which one are you going to go for? Are you going to go for the full frame, or are you going to go for the APS-C sensor, APS-C body sort of thing? Really comes down to, you know, what you need. For me, I always say when you're buying a system, you don't want to look so much at the body. You want to look at the lenses first. So, you know, you're a portrait shooter. You love a shallow depth of field, the nicest bokeh rendering. You know, you might say, oh, that's why I need the 85mm f1.2. So you need the 1.2. That obviously means narrows it down to the Canon ecosystem. So then you got to choose, do you want the EOS R5, the R6, you know, RP, EOS R, that sort of thing. You really want to look at the lenses. So say you really want a lot of 1.2 lenses, not just that, but you don't want to pay a huge price. Then that's where Fuji would come in, because they got a lot of 1.2 lenses, f1.2 lenses for their APS-C system. Obviously, when it comes to actual depth of field, it will be more similar to, say, you know, a 51.2 would be more like an 85.18 in that sense. But at the same time, Fuji do have really nice colors, something, you know, their sensors can do that others can't. So it really comes down to what people want in the body. Obviously, you know, it's not something we'll see quickly or see happen over time. I think as the camera market continues to shrink and shrink more, that's when we'll sort of see who, you know, is the top of that. Because even if you look at Sony, people get very frustrated with them, how they don't focus on APS-C. But the stores here, for example, there's a retailer called Ted's that's everywhere. Their Sony merchandising used to say, you know, full frame is best, size matters, sensor size matters, that kind of stuff, and the advantages of full frame. And when you would go to an event, it would, all the presentations would be the advantage of a full frame sensor, and they'd go on and the salespeople there would try and push you towards full frame. They don't care about APS-C. That's the honest way to say it. They have that option there. So if, you know, someone is 100% set on APS-C, they're going to go for their body. They're still getting those sales, but that's not something they really prioritize. You know, like Fuji, obviously they live and breathe APS-C. Canon, hard to say at the moment because the RF mount, like, the EFM mount, the M bodies like the M5, M6, M6 Mark II, M50 Mark II, those are great bodies, honestly, but how long they'll be supported in the long term, who knows. Nikon, you got your Z50, which, you know, I actually personally really like. I like the fact that it looks just like a mini Z5 or mini Z6. It's got the same ergonomics and look and design as a full frame body, not the, you know, EVF to the side, like what Sony does. I prefer that actual EVF bump and everything. But yeah, it's probably what drew me to my R5. I would say as well, like using an APS-C body, you can get the same results in probably everything except for low light. That's where you really see the full frame shine. But otherwise, you're going to get great results as long as you got the skill. It's not so much about the gear, it's about the skill. But as the camera market begins to shrink, it's something we should watch and see how long APS-C can survive. Because, you know, point and shoots were gone. What's next? Is it Micro Four Thirds? And if Micro Four Thirds goes, that's when it'll start looking more sort of bleak for APS-C. I personally don't think it'll ever get to the point where there's no dedicated interchangeable lens cameras, like say even full frame and medium format are gone. I think if it gets to the absolute worst stage, you know, it'll just be sort of full frame and medium format, and APS-C will sort of become a thing of the past. I don't think that'll happen anytime soon, maybe 10 years from now, 15 years from now, but I feel like APS-C would be more sort of doomed in a sense than full frame would be, just purely because of that sensor size. But I guess we'll eventually find out and we'll see what happens. Hopefully I've done this topic some justice and I didn't sort of just ramble on and you did enjoy this. If you did enjoy this, thank you very much for listening and I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. Once again, thank you for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you do have any questions, suggestions on future topics you'd like me to cover or just want to chat about photography, you can reach out to me at photosbydlwe.com or at Mr. Meowpuss on Twitter. All these links will be in the show notes for this podcast, as well on thephotographyenthusiast.com. If you did enjoy this show and you want to hear more episodes from me, listen to much older content that I've recorded previously, you can find all that at tpepodcast.xyz or just thephotographyenthusiast.com. Thanks again for listening. Make sure to subscribe and you'll hear from me again soon.